Hi, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is the Donna Sebo Show. I'm Donna Sebo, and we've got a dynamic hour for you, and we don't want you to miss any of it. So be sure you have a pad of paper and a pen handy, because I know you're going to want to write some information down. And we have a wonderful guest today. I've always enjoyed stories written by family members about their loved ones. And we're going to be talking about a very, very special lady. Her name is Eileen Heckert. She was a very well-known, renowned actress. The book that was written is by her son, and it's titled Just Outside the Spotlight, and her son's Luke Yankee. Luke, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, it is an absolute pleasure. Now, Eileen Heckert, when I saw the book, when I received this, I recognized her immediately. This is a woman that has been in so many Broadway productions, so many movies over the years, and she's not what you would call, she's not a Marilyn Monroe actress, she's not the glamour actress, but she was so phenomenal as a character actress.
Thank you very much, Donna. And, you know, the reason I chose to call the book Just Outside the Spotlight is that a lot of people don't recognize the name, but when they see her face, they tend to know it immediately.
Yes.
Because she was always the one playing the second banana to Marilyn Monroe, to Sophia Loren, to Mary Tyler Moore, to Paul Newman, and so many other of the biggest stars in Hollywood. And she was very often the one just outside the spotlight. And then as her son at various times, I felt like I was just outside the spotlight. So the book, the title of the book works on several different levels.
Now, I want to mention, Luke, that you yourself are a director, a producer. You've been in acting for many, many years, ever since you were a little shaver, really. You've been
right.
a teacher and a playwright. Los Angeles is your home area.
Yes.
You've been on and off Broadway. You've worked in theaters throughout the country. And you have your own particular show called Diva Dish, which actually helped you get started in writing.
Exactly, Donna. After my mother passed away about 4.5 years ago, I started going through all of this incredible memorabilia from a 50-year career in show business, where she worked with all of the greats. Unpublished photos with Marilyn Monroe, Clark Gable, the Newmans, on and on and on. So, and since I knew from a very early age that I wanted to go into show business, I listened more carefully than my two older brothers, as my mother would tell all of these remarkable stories about her career. So, as we started going through all of this memorabilia, I realized that I was the only one who knew what anything was, and the stories behind it. And if I didn't do something with it, it would have been lost forever.
So, oh, I agree with that. And I love Mary Tyler Moore's foreword about your mother.
Thank you.
She said that your mother was one of the first women, like her Aunt Bertie, who ended up becoming an executive in television. And she said that she just accomplished so much, and she just loved Eileen's performances as well as millions of others. And she said, and I love this story, Mary Tyler Moore never liked to cook. She doesn't like to cook to this day.
Right.
And your mother was so generous in giving her counseling and helping her out. And she presented her, Mary Tyler Moore, with a needlepoint sampler that said in Old English script, screw gourmet cooking.
Exactly. They were very close friends. Mary has been a dear friend of the family's and was close to Mom, and has been very close to me as well. And it's just been such an exciting journey, Donna, writing this book, and the reviews it's gotten have just been wonderful. And in addition to that, it's, you know, while it has a lot of stories of, you know, backstage Hollywood and backstage on Broadway, the heart and soul of this book is really the loving mother-son relationship. And as a result of that, I have been getting these letters and emails from people all over the country just saying how touched they are by the book and how much it reminds them of their own relationship with their parents. And it's just been so gratifying.
Now, I want to touch on a couple of things about your mom. I want to say that she was just full of spit and fire when she was a youngster, wasn't she?
That she was.
My gracious, she was an independent soul.
She always had that. I used to say she was famous for going fire-ready aim. She would say what was on her mind, and then she'd think about what she'd said.
Yes. And there's so much about her, even when she was very, very small, it's almost as if she was preparing to become an actress. Now, she was born in 1919.
Exactly.
The world was so much different than what it is today.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, she was just scandalous with a lot of the things that she did that we would consider tame today.
Well, actually, it wasn't so much that she was scandalous. Really, more her mother was pretty scandalous, because her mother, as I talk about in the book, had an issue with alcohol and also was married 5 times. And in that day and age, that was just shocking. And there were various times that it was a very difficult childhood, Donna, because there were various times that certain of those husbands didn't want a kid around. So my mother would be shipped off to her grandmother's or to some other relatives for a while until that particular man kind of flew the coop.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not at all an easy upbringing. And I think that's one of the things that made her such a tough cookie and made her just so appreciate the importance of family and of her home, which was far more important to her than her career.
Now, your book is a love story on so many different levels.
Thank you.
And the picture in your book, which I'm looking at right now, of your mother and your dad,
mm-hmm.
Jack, and he looks so handsome in his white uniform. Who would have imagined that they would have been able to stay married through all of their ups and downs and through show business, which is one of the screwiest businesses in the world?
Absolutely. You know, Donna, when I was a kid and ever since then, when people found out my mother was in show business, they would say, oh, really? And so how many fathers did you have? And because they just assumed that I came from a broken home, if not several. And I am incredibly proud to say that my parents were married for 53 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so rare in any walk of life these days, let alone in show business. And even though it was this crazy anti-MAME kind of upbringing at times, where Ethel Merman was teaching me how to make martinis and Paul Newman was giving me acting lessons in the living room, it really gave us a stable environment to grow up in and really did everything within their power to make sure that it was just a normal kind of life.
Your mother was the consummate actress. She would get very much involved in her role.
Mm-hmm.
She knew Sidney Poitier, Gregory Hines. She knew Dorothy Gish. I mean, there were so many. I don't think she was unaware of anyone, really. She was right in the thick of whatever was going on, whether it was in movies or in theater. But she was also someone that was so very, very wise and very, very generous with understudies. One of the stories frequently that goes about in show business, or anybody that's going to be on stage, just watch your back because people are going to be out there to cut your throat, yada, yada, yada. Your mother didn't do that.
No, she didn't. And part of the reason she didn't do that is that wasn't what she was taught. When she had her first role on Broadway, really as her first understudy job, was to an actress named Audrey Christie in a very sweet play called The Voice of the Turtle. And my mother, she was so naive from Columbus, Ohio, she just assumed that the understudy automatically got to play at least one performance. So she went to the producer before she was leaving the show and said, I'd like to play Wednesday matinee, and I bought all these tickets for my agent and all my friends. And the producer just looked at her with his mouth open and said, well, I'm sorry, this just isn't a good time. So you know, Audrey Christie saw her in tears and said, what happened? And because they were such close friends. And she explained the situation to Audrey Christie. And Audrey Christie went to the producer and said, I'm going to have a toothache on Wednesday matinee, and so Heckert gets to play the matinee. And the producer stomped his foot and said, you cannot do this to me. His name was Alf de Liagra. He was a very grand gentleman of the theater. And she said, you pick me up on equity charges if you want, but Heckert plays one performance. And so from then on, Donna, she always made sure that her understudy got to perform.
See, and to me, that is absolutely awesome, because very few of the primary actors and actresses honestly are not available. I mean, they are committed to their art. They're there, and unless they're dying, they're always on stage or up in front of the camera. That's just part of who they are.
Well, a lot of people would think, oh, what if the understudy goes on and they're better than I am? Oh,
yes.
What would that do to my reputation? Well, you know what? If the understudy goes on for one performance, they're still the understudy. And it's just, I mean, I love the fact that you are into, you're such a deeply spiritual lady, obviously, which is a very important part of me and my upbringing as well. And so we know that there's enough good to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And so that even if the understudy is wonderful, well, more power to them. That doesn't diminish your talent or your artistry because we're all our own unique rose.
For those of you listening to the broadcast, just tuning in, we're talking with Luke Yankee and talking about his mother, Eileen Heckert. She is a woman that was renowned in the show business industry on Broadway, television, and in movies. The book is titled Just Outside the Spotlight. It is an incredible story, and we do have one book to give away today. So if you would like to get a free copy of the book, please call me at 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852, and leave your contact information, and we'll make sure that you get a copy of the book. Like I said, this book is filled with love stories, including Joanne Woodward and Paul Newman. Your mother was in on that romance from the beginning.
She sure was. Paul and Joanne were very close friends of the family because they actually met doing a Broadway play called Picnic by William Inge. And it was one of Paul's first roles on Broadway. Joanne was actually understudying. And Paul was playing the small role of the rich boy next door because the producers didn't think he was sexy enough to play the leading man. It's a little hard to believe that in this day and age, but they thought that at the time. And yes, Paul and Joanne met doing Picnic, and the rest is, as they say, is history. It was the show that put my mother on the map. It was the show that put an actress named Kim Stanley on the map. And it was just a groundbreaking piece of theater and also launched one of the great show business romances, Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward.
You touch also so many special personal spots in your life, and in sharing them, there is a whole view of, you might say, the inside world of your mother, your family. And you have a very special lady that was in your life, and she was called Nanny. Now, how did Nanny get involved with your family and her role in the
film? I am so glad you mentioned Nanny. You know, Donna, I've been doing so many interviews since the book came out in May, and you are the first person to mention my nanny. God bless you for that. My mother always said that she could not have had a career without an exceptional husband, which my father certainly was, and an exceptional governess or nanny. And this little lady who had been a baby nurse when she was younger, and she'd had a brain aneurysm that had left her partially paralyzed. And she had a serious brace on her leg, and so she was trying to get work as a personal nurse, and nobody would hire her because of this, you know, she mm-hmm. looked seriously deformed. And so she had an interview with my mother, and this was her last chance. She was from Glasgow, had an accent you could cut with a knife, and she thought, all right, if I don't get this job, I'm out of money, I'm out of hope, I have to go back home if I don't get this job. So Mom interviewed this lady, and she gave her references, and Mom kept trying not to stare at her twisted limb. And finally, at the end of the interview, this lady looked at my mother, my nanny, and she said, yes, obviously I have this affliction, but I just know that if God will give me a baby to take care of, I'll be all right. And Mom said, I have a matinee. Can you start tomorrow? And Nanny said, but you haven't checked any of my references. And she squeezed her hand and said, honey, you just gave them.
That's
and
it.
Nanny was with our family for 35 years. And after she wasn't well enough to take care of us anymore, then we took care of Nanny until her death. And she used to say in that Scottish burr you could cut with a knife, she'd say, oh, I'm your mummy's understudy. She was a delight, and she really was a second mother to me and to my brothers as well.
Well, I have to tell you, I fell in love with one of the stories about Nanny, and she was very practical because of Scottish background, and you were about a year old, and she had you on your blanket with your toys in the middle of the kitchen floor while she was doing her chores. You were a regular rascal. You know, you got into the pantry, you dumped 5 pounds of coffee all over the floor. You were having a wonderful time. You were using this coffee scoop as a shovel.
Absolutely.
And you had, I mean, it was your sand pile. You had it everywhere.
I sure did. And my mother came down to get her morning coffee, and she was not her best before her coffee after a late night at the theater. And here I am in the middle of the kitchen floor just scooping coffee everywhere, just having a grand time. And Nanny's just totally oblivious, doing the dishes and preparing dinner for that night. And Mom said, are you just going to let him play in that? And she said, oh, well, he's already made the mess. He might as well have a good time. And that was a Scottish practicality. You know, what did it matter if she cleaned up the coffee at 10 or at 12? You know, it was still going to be the same mess.
Yes, and your mom was going a mile a minute. And then your brother came along.
Yes.
And so Nanny was busy with the second baby.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom was involved with so many different activities. One of the old movies is called Miracle in the Rain, and that was with Van Johnson and Jane Wyman.
Exactly.
And there's just all kinds of personalities, Ronald Reagan, and tell us about what happened with Jane
Wyman.
No, not well. Jane Wyman and also Nancy Reagan. You got to tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my mother was doing her first film, and you know, over the course of a 50-year career, she really worked with and knew everybody. I mean, the book really goes the range from Lillian Gish and Mae West all the way up to Martha Stewart and Ellen DeGeneres, and really pretty much every star over the past 50 years in between. But when she was doing her first film, this was 1953, it was called Miracle in the Rain, as you said, with Van Johnson and Jane Wyman. And it was a really sappy love story. And Jane Wyman, who was a big star at the time, invited my mother to her first big Hollywood party. She was so excited to be invited to a Hollywood soiree with all these stars. And one of the stars in attendance was Jane's ex-husband, this kind of big Hollywood actor by the name of Ronnie Reagan. And Ronnie was there with Nancy, his current wife. And Ronnie, your mom wanted some good Hollywood gossip that night, and Ronnie just held everyone captive, talking about every bill that was up for renewal in the state of California, how every senator had voted about every filibuster. And she wasn't very politically savvy at the time. So towards the end of the evening, Jane Wyman said, come on, honey, come out of the kitchen and help me pour the after-dinner drinks. So Mom and Jane are out in the kitchen, and Mom said, Jane, Ronnie seems very nice and all, but doesn't he ever stop talking about politics? And Jane groaned and rolled her eyes and just said, oh, why do you think I divorced the SOB?
Well, there's another side of life we didn't expect to hear about. Ah, yes, perspective.
Indeed.
Isn't that something?
If she'd had a little more tolerance, she might have gone on to be first lady.
Who knows? One of the most elegant women in film, very dynamic, was Marlena Dietrich.
Oh, yes.
But this woman was just in all kinds of paradigms. You think you know her when you read certain stories that you have in the book, and then you find out she's down on the floor scrubbing. You've got to give us more of, you know, I mean, this woman was incredibly gorgeous. I mean, up until shortly before she passed away, she was appearing on stage in these outfits that most of us just gasp, wondering how we'd ever manage to fit into them when we were her age.
Absolutely. She had to be sewn into many of them, actually.
Oh, really? Oh,
absolutely.
That's a secret.
And her daughter, Maria Riva, who's a dear friend, has written an incredible book called Marlena Dietrich by her daughter. Marlena got to be very friendly with Mom and really respected her work, and she invited her to go spend the weekend with her in Las Vegas while she was doing her nightclub act. So Mom showed up at the Sands Hotel, went down, opened the stage door very quietly, not wanting to interrupt Marlena's rehearsal. She walked further and further into the theater. She still didn't hear anything. Finally, when her eyes adjusted to the dim lighting, she saw a scrub woman on the stage with a bucket and a brush who was scrubbing the floor on her hands and knees. And Mom turned to the washerwoman and said, excuse me, I'm trying to find Miss Dietrich. And that gorgeous face looked up from the scrub bucket and said, hello, darling, how was your twip? That was Marlena Dietrich on her hands and knees scrubbing the stage. Mom said, Marlena, what are you doing? Surely they have people here to do things like that. And Marlena threw her scrub bucket down and threw her brush down with disgust and said, oh, these people never get this floor clean enough. I'm going to drag a $50,000 ermine around this stage tonight. It's got to be apparently Marlene Dietrich did things like that in every theater that she went into. I mean, one moment she was being the glamour gal ordering champagne by the gallons, and the next moment she was the housefrau on her hands and knees, you know, scrubbing the stage or cutting up the Black Forest ham.
It's just amazing. That is what makes your book so delightful.
Thank you.
Because you share so many different, what do I want to say, aspects, and it's like you open one door and you're given all of this information about what's going on behind the scenes in Hollywood, and then you close that door and then, oh, whoop, we got to go over here to what's behind door number five, and well, then door number seven. And
one of the comments, Donna, that I've gotten a great deal that really touches me is that people say, I take a lot of these big stars, a lot of these, you know, icons of our time, and really humanize them,
yes,
with a very human face on them. And, I mean, my mother was certainly, you know, she used to say, thank heavens I don't have Elizabeth Taylor's problems. I mean, because she was a hardworking character actress. I mean, she wasn't the type who would go to the supermarket and you know, have people,
mm-hmm,
you know, be mobbed. But it's just the fact that I really take these people and take them off the pedestal, if you will, and really kind of show both sides of them. I mean, Marlene is a very good example of showing the glamour gal one moment and then the housefrau the next.
Oh, I think it's just marvelous. The Bad Seed, your mother performed in that play, and she also was in the movie. But
yes,
this was a tough role for her because she had to play the role of an alcoholic, and she didn't drink.
Exactly. Exactly. She was playing the alcoholic mother of a little boy who had been murdered by one of his classmates. As the plot unfolds, you find that out. And my brother Mark was roughly the same age as the little boy who had been killed. And so my mother, she usually didn't do this kind of substitution as an actress, but she would start seeing his face every night as the face of her boy who had been drowned. And it was such an incredible role. I mean, she had these two intense drunk scenes where she's crying and screaming and just really wailing, you know, from the depths of her soul over the loss of her child. And it just got so, she started taking it so personally. As she was seeing her brother's face, she would start getting depressed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And by the time she would get to the theater, she was an absolute mess. Until finally, this was an incredibly successful play, and she got rave reviews. She wound up leaving the show because it was just too hard on her emotionally, and she thought she was having a nervous breakdown, and the doctor said, there's nothing wrong with you, you just need to leave this play. So finally, that's what she did, and then because of the intense and rigorous schedule on a movie set, she was able to go back to do the film, and, you know, just since that was such a concentrated time period. And it's interesting, she only has 8 minutes in the entire film, and of course in the play as well, and she received an Academy Award nomination and won a Golden Globe Award, because that is one incredible 8 minutes.
Yes, it is. Now, Marilyn Monroe, she knew very well.
Yes.
Elvis Presley, she knew well. But I did enjoy your section about her in the movie Heller in Pink Tights with Sophia Loren, Anthony Quinn, and Margaret O'Brien. And Sophia Loren is a person that I've just always thought was just so elegant and just was extremely lovely. And today she's in her 70s and she looks like she's in her 50s.
Well,
and she's just incredible.
She's just the epitome of grace and elegance. But for all of her natural beauty, which she has in spades, Sophia felt a need to enhance it. And even when she was very young, and apparently a lot of those glamour gals, people like Marilyn Monroe, et cetera, did the same thing. And one of Sophia's beauty tips was that she had these invisible tapes that she had flown in from Sweden. And she would put these on the corner of her eyes, and they would pull just a little bit, and they would enhance the almond shape of her eyes and also help to avoid crow's feet. Well, Margaret O'Brien was a young woman in her 20s and very much part of the Hollywood culture. I mean, we remember her as so many wonderful roles that she did as a little girl, things like Meet Me in St. Louis, etc. But she was fascinated with all of Sophia's beauty tips. And the film was directed by the legendary director George Cukor, who directed Camille with Greta Garbo and so many amazing films. And there was one day that my mother had a late call, and she came to the set, and George Cukor was ranting and raving, which was so unlike his personality. And she said, George, what is the matter? And he screamed, you know all that great location work we did last Tuesday? Well, we have to reshoot the whole bloody morning because Margaret O'Brien looks Chinese. And she had gotten a hold of Sophia's and pulled them too tight. And unfortunately, they weren't able to reshoot because it was all location stuff. So if you ever see this movie on The Late Show, if you look closely at Margaret O'Brien, for about three-quarters of the movie, she looks like Margaret O'Brien. But for the last quarter, she looks a little like Madame Chiang Kai-shek.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. This is just delightful. Now, we have to tell the story about Barbra Streisand.
Oh, my.
This, to me, is wonderful. And she's one of my favorite singers. And this is just so graphic. Secondhand Rose and Barbra Streisand, hand in hand. You must tell the story.
Absolutely. Well, my mother she did very few musicals in her life, but the first one that she starred in, which musicals just terrified her, was a musical called The Family Affair, which starred Shelley Berman, and it was music by John Kander, and it was actually the first show Hal Prince directed on Broadway. A lot of very substantial people behind it. Unfortunately, it never entirely worked. So, and there was a wonderful musical director named Stanley Lebowski, who really helped my mother a lot and really nursed her through this, since she wasn't a very musical person. And after the show had opened, Stanley Lebowski said, well, we're having rehearsals for the understudy for the ingenue, who was played by Rita Gardner. And would you please, there's a particular woman I'd like you to hear. Would you please, you know, come in on early on Tuesday and listen to this woman? And Mom thought to herself, oh, for goodness sake, I mean, why do I care about the understudy to the ingenue? I mean, but Stanley's been very good to me, so I'll do this favor for him. So they go in, and they wait, and they wait, and this woman shows up 45 minutes late, comes in dressed like she's just stepped out of the Salvation Army in these ratty clothes and stringy hair in her face. And she said, oh, I'm terribly sorry, but I'm about to open at the Rainbow Room, and I couldn't decide on which shoes to wear, and so I'm not sure if I should wear the flats or the pumps, and I have to take the other ones back at 6 o'clock. So what do you think? And she roots through all these shopping bags and puts on one of each shoe. And my mother said, darling, for the Rainbow Room, I think you better wear the heels. So, thank you, Miss Heckin. I'm such a fan of your work. So this scraggly, crazy woman is just all over the place. Finally, she takes this hair out of her face, gets herself all together, turns to the accompanist, and this voice comes out as she starts singing, soon it's gonna rain, I can't feel it. And my mother's jaw just drops to the floor. And Stanley Lebowski said afterwards, well, crazy, what do you think? I said, what do I think? I adore Rita Gardner, but fire Rita Gardner and give this girl the part. What's her name? She says, well, her name is Barbra Streisand.
Amazing.
And, of course, shortly they did, in fact, offer her the understudy in A Family Affair. But right at that same time, she was offered, I Can Get It For You Wholesale, and went on as Miss Marmalstein in a cameo role and took the theater community by storm, and the rest is history.
Well, to find out more about Eileen Heckert's history, about movie stars, about a lifestyle in the theater, in movies, you have to get this book, and we have one free book to give away today. So give me a call at my office at 800-872-8852, and I can guarantee you, you'll be mesmerized by it. Once you pick it up, you will not be able to put it down, because there is just all of this life that it went on around this woman with so many wonderful, wonderful people. Luke, I think you did a phenomenal job with your mother's story. And there is so much love on
Thank
so
you,
many
Donna.
Different levels that you express. It is absolutely fabulous. And I want to know about the website, because we just have a few seconds here before we're going. What's the website people can go to?
www.lukeyankee.com.
LukeYankee.com. Luke, you've done something phenomenal. Thank you for being my guest.
Bless you, Donna. It's my pleasure.
Have a fabulous, fabulous life, and I look forward to your next book.
Thank you so much. It's my honor.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. And again, we've got one free book to give away today. Call me at my office, 800-872-8852. Be sure to leave your contact information, and I will be getting back to you. We want to get this out to you as soon as possible. Just outside the spotlight, an inside look into the world of magic that we know as show business. Something I know you'll enjoy. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo on the Hour of Mind Power. And again, we have one free book to give away about just outside the spotlight, growing up with Eileen Heckert. Luke Yankee, who I just interviewed, her son, And the book is just so wonderful. And I would just say, if you have a love of show business, whether it's movies, stage, television, I don't care what level it is, you are going to want to have a copy of this. And we have been very graciously given one to give away. So call me at my office, which is 800-872-8852. And we'll be able to get that copy off to you. Now, I want to mention, and you have been hearing me talking about this, I'm going to be doing an appearance for the next 3 weekends at the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and I'll have more to tell you about it next week, because this is the first weekend coming up, August 5th and 6th. Of course, there's the 12th, the 13th, the 19th, and the 20th, and it's at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, Washington, and all you have to do, if you are in the Washington area, or if you're planning on flying up to Washington to come in to see this wonderful event, all you have to do is go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's WashingtonRenFaire.com. It is just so exciting because within just a very short period of time, an area of land that normally is just not used for much of anything is transformed into, seemingly by magic, the 16th century. And when you come up to the gate and you walk through the portal into this wonderful environment, the whole area is just magical. You have people in all types of roles that they're playing and the costumes that they're wearing, and it's going a mile a minute from the time that the gates open until they close in the evening. It's family fun and just the highest level. So I want to invite you to come along and look for my booth. I'm going to be on Main Street. That's the first street of the fair. As you walk in, turn to your right. I'm usually towards the end of that street. Look for the booth that has the bright yellow and gold banners with the huge, brilliant red lions on them. That's my 16th century insignia, if you will. And, of course, I'll be there in costume myself, and I'll be doing little mini consultations for people. But there's so much going on. 8 stages of activity. Music, dancing, activities for children, craftspeople there doing the work that was done in the 16th century. It gives you an opportunity to experience something that maybe you've never experienced before. And the food is delicious, and the people are wonderful. You're going to find there's so many delightful stories people have to share. You'll go home telling your friends, but better yet, encourage them to come on out, because it is an event. Go to WashingtonRenFair.com. It's starting up this weekend and going to be going for the following 2 weekends as well, so I look forward to seeing you there. Now, I do want to let you know that we are going to be having a wonderful guest tomorrow, Eleanor Wiley. We're going to be talking about There Are No Mistakes. Serendipitous events? Well, we'll be talking about that, too. And then next week, we have some fascinating guests. We're going to be talking about everything from how to cook without wheat, a gluten-free process with Susan O'Brien. We're going to be talking about the God Theory with Bernard Heisch. We're also going to be talking with the lady I call the Doodle Lady. Her name is Carol Edmondson, and she has a wonderful story to tell. And then Induced After-Death Communication, Alan Botkin is going to be our guest. And also Dr. Diamond, who is a man who's been involved with metaphysics for a long, long time. He's going to be talking about facets of a diamond. So we'll just leave you guessing on that one. So you don't want to miss any of it. And we've got some changes that are occurring here at bbsradio.com. And when you now come in to listen to the programming, you will need to sign in. Programming is all free, but now there is a different procedure that you'll have to go through to be able to listen to the shows and to the archives. So what you want to do is just go to the front page and all the instructions will be there. This is a new change that is being put into place, so we want to let you know about that. And be sure and tell your friends that they can always come and participate in the show just like you can. If you'd like to call up and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, then give me a buzz, because the telephone lines are now open at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, I get emails from people, and I wanted to share this cute one. Now, of course, you can't see the animation But I'm going to give you a little bit of a visualization. It's like Mr. Potato Head. He's got his hat on, his arms, his long eyelashes, and he's got on his tennis shoes. And we're talking about the Tater people. And this was sent to me by a person that just, she just has a wonderful sense of humor. And she said, these are all to the sweet taters in my life. And it's spelled T-A-T-E-R-F. Now, these are the Tater people. Now, some people never seem motivated to participate, but are just content to watch while others do the work. They're called spectators. Some people never do anything to help, but are gifted at finding fault with the way others do the work. They're called commentators. Some people are very bossy and like to tell others what to do, but don't want to soil their hands. They're called dictators. Some people are always looking to cause problems by asking others to agree with them. It's too hot, or it's too cold, it's too sour, or it's too sweet. They're called agitators. There are those who say they will help, but somehow just never get around to actually doing the promised help. They're called hesitators. Some people can put up a front and pretend to be someone they're not, and they're called imitators. But then there are those who love others and do whatever they say they will. They're always prepared to stop whatever they're doing and lend a helping hand. They bring real sunshine into the lives of others. They're called sweetators. All of these little Mr. Potato Head's doing their little dance on the email, so I want to thank the person that sent this to me, and that was Gail. I just really, really enjoyed that. That was so cute. And by the way, if you have something special, a recipe or something special in the way of a story you'd like to share with me, or maybe there's someone that you think would make a wonderful guest, and maybe there's an author you know of, just send the information along, and I'll be happy to respond to you as quickly as I can. We get emails from all over the country and even from different parts of the world, and it's always a delight to be able to interact with you and to share things with you and to hear your stories, because you are our audience, and it makes everything that we do worthwhile. We like to know that we're making a difference in your life, and we like to hear from you. Oh, and by the way, there's also a comment button on the website of bbsradio.com. And if you have comments about the show or anything you'd like for us to know about, go into that comment section and type out your little message to us. Because, again, we like hearing from you. Give us a call if you'd like to chat with me. I'll be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227. Have you ever noticed how voices change? Well, of course, we're all familiar with the young person, especially the young boys, who might have a particular tone in their voice, and then suddenly they enter puberty and the voice drops about 45 octaves, it seems. Well, there's a lady, Sue Ellen Linville. She's a voice specialist in the Department of Speech Pathology and Audiology at Marquette University. She said voices change between young adulthood and old age because of an anatomical change in the larynx. That's your voice box. It changes also in your respiratory system, your mouth, and the tissues of the throat. Now, some of those changes can include atrophy of your muscles, increased stiffness of tissues, and drying of membranes. There's also evidence that facial bones continue to grow during this period, although the magnitude of its growth is small. Now, the physical changes affect your voice by increasing the instability of the vocal cord vibration, altering the pitch level, and reducing the amount of air available in a single breath when speaking. Now, as people age, that seemingly affects the manner in which the voice resonates as it travels from the vocal cords to the lips. And those resonant changes affect voice quality. Have you ever listened to certain people and you notice how their voice is still just as rich as it was when they were younger? Or actually, you'll notice it will get richer as they get older. I think of Orson Welles. He had this wonderful richness in his voice. It was just significant. And I can remember when I first heard him speak, I went, whoa, this guy is really something. And there's so many other famous people that I think of, James Earl Jones. And even though he's matured, listen to the richness in his voice. It's so distinctive, and it's just wonderfully captivating. Now, age-related voice changes are different for men and women, and men tend to show more dramatic changes. Now, with men, speaking pitch lowers from young adulthood to middle age, and then it seems to rise a bit after middle age. By the time a man is 80 years of age, he can expect that his speaking pitch will be at the highest level of his adult life. Now, I didn't know that. I would have thought it would have been the case with women, not with men. Now, with women, the speaking pitch remains relatively unchanged from young adulthood to middle age, and the pitch in women lowers slightly at menopause and then remains fairly steady into old age. So for some reason, women's voices don't necessarily change that much. And other age-related voice and speech changes in, well, men and women both, include a slower speaking rate and a restriction of pitch range. And for those of you that are singers and you're maturing, you notice that your pitch may not, you know, if you're female or male, it may not be as high as it once was. However, something I'll have to share with you. When it comes to the voice, when you exercise the voice, when you do breathing exercises, you can still keep a good amount of your voice. But if you smoke, if you drink, if you don't take care of yourself, it's going to go. It's just not going to stay there. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break, and when we come back, I've got a wonderful story to share with you, unless you'd like to chat with me. 877-876-5227 is the telephone number to call into if you would like to do that. And we're going to be back in just a moment, so don't you go anywhere. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I want to remind you this coming weekend I'm going to be appearing at the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair at Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, Washington. This is so much fun. You are able to actually see knights in shining armor on their magnificent steeds. Yes, this is for real, folks. And if you're a romantic, you are just going to absolutely love all of the romance of this 16th century medieval village that is out in Gig Harbor that is just absolutely spectacular. And we're all going to be there in costume, and you're going to see so many wonderful aspects of that period of history represented. You will see those great war horses charging down the list, carrying armored knights, jousting for king, queen, country, and even the hand of a fair maiden. And you know what? If you wanted to dress up as a knight or a fair maiden, there are people there that provide costumes, so you can get right into the theme yourself. You can have a marvelous time. Now, to find out about pricing, hours, where you go, how you get there, go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. And there you're going to find all kinds of wonderful information about activities. You'll have pictures. You'll have all kinds of good details. And you'll be able to buy your tickets online, save money when you do that, and then you won't have to stand in that long line at the fair. So be sure you go to the WashingtonRenFair.com website. Now, if you want to talk to someone personally, you can call 800-359-5948. That's 359-5948. Or you can email them at ByronM@WashingtonRenFair.com. That's BryonM like Mary at WashingtonRenFair.com. One way or the other, you'll be able to get the information, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. And look for me in my booth. I'm going to be on the main street. And look for me in my booth that has the golden yellow banners with the big red lions on it, and you can't miss it. And I'll be sitting in there in costume doing many consultations with people, and I'm going to have a lot of books available for many of the authors that have been on my program, so you're going to be able to see a lot of those as well. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call me at 877-876-5227. There's a former blacksmith who has developed something with his family that is a tradition for them, and he loves to cook outside over an open fire. Now, his name is Johnny Nix, and he lives in Albertville, Alabama. And people will say, Johnny, why in the world do you want to cook over an open fire instead of a grill? I mean, gee whiz, this is the modern age. Use a barbecue, for heaven's sakes. That's what we do. And, well, he has an attitude about this. He said, I agree. Grilling is wonderful. However, I'm a little old-fashioned, and I'm a blacksmith, and I really, really enjoy doing some things the old-fashioned way. And he said he really likes campfire cooking. And I know it seems like a hassle, and I think the last time I went camping, that was exactly how I felt about it. It was more than a hassle. It seemed like that's all I was doing was cleaning and cooking and cleaning and cooking and that kind of stuff. But anyway, if you love camping, cooking outdoors, it really does taste much better. There's just something about it. It's absolutely wonderful. But when he was growing up in Alabama, he said his family went camping frequently. And they just loved the adventure of it. And he said, my dad taught me how to make a campfire. He said he dug a hole 6 inches deep and surrounded it with large flat rocks that he'd pick up around the campsite. And then my dad would send me out to look for twigs, to look for little bits and pieces of wood so he could stack them in the center of this big hole that he made like a pyramid. And then he'd light the twigs, and of course the fire started going, and then he'd throw on a couple of split logs. And he said it'd take about an hour for the fire to heat up enough to cook on. So he said what we would do when all this was going on, we'd sit around while Dad was working and we'd tell stories and jokes. And he said you just can't beat that, especially when the nights are getting cool and you're sitting with your friends and family and you're just out there in nature. He said you just fall in love with the environment. It's just absolutely magical. Well, after he grew up and got married, his wife enjoyed going out in the country just as much as he did. He decided, because he's a blacksmith, he was going to do something rather unique. He made his own cooking set in his blacksmith shop, and they never went riding or camping without this wonderful bit of equipment, and I got a picture of it in front of me, and it's just beautiful. I mean, it's really, really well made. And when their children were coming along, he said he would take the kids out just like his dad did with him and show them how to cook a whole meal out on a campfire. And he said they'd have charbroiled ribs and beans in a Dutch oven and baked potatoes and hot corn on the cob over a swing grill and a cast iron cooking service that you can swivel over the flames. He said that her friends would go, wow, I didn't know people could cook like this. Well, it's not unlike what the early colonists did with their kitchens, the same kind of theme. So it was just absolutely wonderful. And he said, when we were doing this, we just really would find that our family had this magical, magical moment. And he said, there was all kinds of people, wherever we would go, whenever we were in certain camp areas, they would just be fascinated with what I was doing. And he said, one time there was an 80-year-old gentleman that walked over and sat down in a chair around his campfire and said, you know, this reminds me of the campfires we used to light back in my days as a cowboy. And he started sharing his wonderful stories. And Johnny said, there's something about a campfire that just invites people in. Strangers start telling their stories, and pretty soon they're not strangers anymore. And he said, sort of slows life down enough to remind you of what's important. So he extended an invitation to people to come on out and join him out on the open range for that experience. Well, I don't know that we can do that, but I think that we can sort of share it in his story form and just keep it in mind about life in general. We need to sometimes just slow down and enjoy those campfires and enjoy the roses. Remember also, you're the master of your fate and you are the captain of your soul. You are the magician in your life. You're the person that has a story to tell. And if you come across somebody today that maybe needs to hear your story, won't you share it with them? You're going to light up their life, just the way I like to think I light up your life every day with the Donna Sebo Show. Have a fabulous, fabulous day, and just know, hey, your light's just as bright as that sun that's beaming out there today. Enjoy. Have a great one. Bye for now. Talk with you tomorrow.